And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. We are right in the middle of bowl season, and we are powering on with our second edition of the CBSSports.com Expert Picks bowl version. We got a rough start for your host right here, but my two guests, as they normally are, a little bit stronger with their expert picks. We are recording here before the Friday games start, the Saturday games. If you're looking for those are on the previous podcast. We will be looking at the 30th and moving on. So far, your boy is out to 2-6. Tom and Jerry each at 4-4. Jerry, so far, how has some of your theories that you presented at the beginning of last podcast, how have they worked out?
I think as a general rule, they've been fairly solid. Where possible, I've gone for a coaching experience advantage, and we've seen that play out with Tulane and Louisiana Lafayette, Boise State and Oregon, Pitt and Bowling Green. Like, again, all of these cases, the coach that was kind of the first time bowl guy or the team with an interim coach wasn't able to get it done. And Ohio, I mentioned Frank Solich's solid performance. And for the first three quarters, that was absolutely in evidence as the Bobcats, despite being heavy underdogs, were 3 points ahead and had the ball deep in East Carolina territory. So that was good. And let's not talk about what happened the rest of that game.
Three interceptions later, ECU is able to get those last touchdowns they needed to cover. Tom, you get the most impressive pick that we have seen thus far, being the only one to take USC to cover 6.5. And sure enough, they did that and more, topping Fresno State 45-20. Did you celebrate that win in any particular way?
No. Actually, there wasn't much to celebrate. The entire pick was just based on if USC shows up actually wanting to play, it's going to crush them. And I got lucky. USC actually showed up wanting to play.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And that was impressive, as Clay Helton, the interim coach for that game, will be retained as the offensive coordinator. Now, what we're going to do for this next edition, we're going to start at the Orange Bowl and sort of work our way backwards. That way, hopefully, you, the listeners, are not going to have to wade your way through stale information. So let's start right there, the Orange Bowl. Clemson and Ohio State. Ohio State, a lost opportunity after falling in the Big Ten title game. They were in that number two spot, poised for the BCS championship game, and all they needed to do is beat Michigan State. They could not. Clemson 10-2. Once again, another year where they're really able to just run past a lot of their opponents, but South Carolina and Florida State, the two teams they just cannot beat right now. Let's start with you, Jerry. When you're looking at this one, is it one of those things where is there a particular angle when you're trying to make your selection that you're picking out here?
Well, again, I look at the coaching a little bit, and Dabo Swinney has a very good record as an underdog against teams outside of South Carolina and Florida State. If you remember last season's very memorable victory over LSU, you can see how much that game meant to him. And I think this one's going to matter an awful lot to these guys as well. Ohio State, comes in as the slight favorite, not a heavy one, but definitely a favorite. And I think, Clemson needs this game to redeem this season to some extent. This was supposed to be their year. They got all the way to number three in the polls, beat Georgia for the big victory. Again, sort of that chip on the shoulder attitude that Swinney's able to instill, I think, had something to do with that win as well. But then, obviously, the Florida State game was just a complete debacle. And then the South Carolina game, really in its own way, was equally debaculous. I think Clemson comes into this game with an obvious sort of need for redemption to sort of make up for those two really, really stinging losses. And I think Swinney has shown an ability to get his team ready for it. And so I kind of like Clemson to shade this one just a bit. It's not a game I have a ton of confidence in, but I do think Taj Boyd, if Connor Cook can get some things done against this Ohio State secondary, and he did, I definitely think Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins can do the same.
Tom, Ohio State did not allow a 100-yard rusher all season and racked up 40 sacks. That is one of the better numbers in the nation. But as Jerry just mentioned, pass defense, particularly against Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins, is a concern. If you're an Ohio State fan, how concerned do you think you are about that aspect of the game?
I'd be pretty damn concerned, simply just the way that Ohio State's defense has performed in the last two games. I mean, even against Michigan State, a team that is not exactly known for moving the ball vertically down the field to the passing game, they found plenty of space in that secondary to move the ball. All that said, I went with Ohio State, but a phrase you're going to hear me say quite a bit in this podcast today, I'm not all that confident in the pick.
Yeah.
It's with these games, with these teams that are so evenly matched in bowl games, there's so many factors besides the actual matchups of the teams that come into play. But I'm going with Ohio State. I think the key factor to this game will be the pass rush of both teams. Whichever team can get to Taj Boyd or Braxton Miller the most is probably going to win. If neither side can get there, we're going to see a very, very high scoring game. One trend to pick on, though, even though it goes against what I'm doing, but for, you know, the listeners who I'm trying to help, Ohio State started the season 7-2 against the spread. They are currently 7-6 against the spread. So you might want to consider that when making your pick.
Dropping their last four, we are split as the experts, 3-3 on this game. And I think, as we just both alluded to, this is a podcast consensus that complete coin flip, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you'll see a lot in our picks and the expert picks. There's a lot of 3-3s where we're all split right down the middle, and it's for good reason.
Yes. These are tough games to call, especially since, I don't know, what, we picked these like a month ago from where we're sitting now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. I forgot these games were being played.
Yeah. I'm glad they're here now. What a great Christmas treat. We're moving on to the Cotton Bowl, which will also be Friday night, January 3rd. Oklahoma State and Missouri, two teams that both had a conference title and a BCS bid sort of in their hands right there in the last week of the regular season. Oklahoma State, though, I would argue, really, that's a little bit more embarrassing. It felt like Missouri just ran out of gas against an unstoppable sort of Auburn attack. Certainly that defense got shredded, but all things considered, I think Missouri maybe doesn't take it. I don't necessarily knock them as much. Tom, what makes you think that Oklahoma State's going to be able to pick themselves up after Clint Shelf, you know, such a weird final game after the Baylor performance, and Oklahoma State as a whole, just a lot of miscues at home against an Oklahoma team that they really should have beat?
Yeah, it's another game I don't feel all that strong about, but Oklahoma State, I picked them essentially because they have been running the ball well. If you take out that Oklahoma game, they've been moving the ball well on the ground, both Chelf and the running backs. And as we saw, Missouri's got a very good defense, but as Auburn showed, you can't run the ball against them if you play it right. But also, even in that loss to Oklahoma, the Oklahoma State defense really didn't play poorly until probably the fourth quarter when Oklahoma got some touchdown drives going. And even then, let's remember that that last Oklahoma touchdown was kind of just, you know, a fluke fumble cover in the end zone to end the game. So overall, Oklahoma State, I don't think, played poorly in that game. The offense struggled, but the defense was fine. So because of that, I'm going with the Cowboys. But again, this is another one of those games where I really, truly have absolutely no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you right there. We are split 3-3 on this one. I don't have a ton of confidence. You know, I look at, and this was a game that I believe was previewed by the esteemed Jerry Hinnon. Is that correct?
Was.
Did you write the preview for this game?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, this one of the interesting matchups to watch here is going to be your LaDainian Washington, your Doriel Green Beckham, going up against the likes of Justin Gilbert and a mm-hmm. Oklahoma State secondary. That's pretty good. And then on the other side, you've got EJ Gaines. I mean, it just seems like a really, really fun matchup, and I could see this one
Definitely.
Going anyway. What'd you like about Missouri?
What I like about Missouri is their defense. I realize that, yes, they just gave up more yards in an SEC game to an SEC opponent than any SEC team ever has on the ground. But that was a fluke. Like, Missouri came into that game with an outstanding rush defense, actually. Michael Sam, Coney Ealy, those guys, you know, they can play. It doesn't necessarily matter what we saw against Auburn. And Oklahoma State's offense, as we saw against Oklahoma, you know, maybe isn't sort of the type of offense that's going to be able to move the ball with extreme efficiency against a top quality defense, which I believe Missouri certainly is. I'm excited about this game. I think it's two very evenly matched teams, but I do like Missouri's, you know, balance in their offensive set. Like, clearly they can run the ball. Henry Josey, a veteran offensive line. James Franklin can even kind of scramble a little bit. But there's no way to send extra guys towards the line of scrimmage to stop that running game when you might get a 50-yard Doriel Green Beckham touchdown or LaDainian Washington free over the middle. It's just, I really like that offensive balance. I think Missouri kind of increased that balance over the course of the season, you know, between the running game and the passing game. Early in the season, the passing game was kind of up and down a bit, but now it's better. Matchup problems all over the field. I think in the end, Missouri's offense is just a little bit better than Oklahoma State's offense, and their defense is just a little bit better than Oklahoma State's defense, and I think they should be able to win this game.
Move into from a couple of very tight spread coin flip style games, you know, under a field goal to not so much as Alabama, the way we picked it, a 15.5-point favorite against Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl. Alabama really tears up BCS non-conference opponents, and the last time that they were not in a BCS national championship game, they absolutely made work of Michigan State. Oklahoma, big win at the end of the year on the road in Stillwater, and they were able to do it with three different quarterbacks playing. I'm going to go right back to you, Jerry. Does it make you nervous that there's so much? It seems like too easy of a pick, in my opinion, to take the Tide rolling here.
No, it does not make me nervous at all. This was my 35-point confidence pick, both straight up and against the spread in our pool competition. Alabama has just worked teams like Oklahoma for years. You know, the last two non-SEC bowl teams that Alabama played, well, really, I mean, you can toss LSU in there even if you want. Alabama's bowl record is tremendous. Alabama's record in non-conference BCS games is tremendous. You know, we saw that against Notre Dame, you know, and to me, like, talent wise, offensive wise, this reminds me of that game against Michigan State in the 2010 Capital One Bowl, where Alabama just, it was a complete and total mismatch. Oklahoma, they've done some great things this year, particularly on defense, but I look at that offense that doesn't know who its quarterback is. Is it Blake Bell? Is it Trevor Knight? You know, maybe even is it Kendall Thompson? Doesn't seem to have a real strong offensive identity. Alabama's just going to eat that Oklahoma offense for lunch, you know, and they'll still have some leftovers for dinner, I think. This is going to be a total blowout. I'm thinking 31-7, but it may be worse than that.
Tom, do you have a score for me?
I would say something probably similar to what Jerry said, 31-7, but I also want to mention the one thing that worries me is, remember last time that Alabama missed out on a title game and had to play in the Sugar Bowl, what happened then?
Was that Utah?
Yeah. So, I mean, there is this slight chance that Alabama just doesn't care. But I think even if they don't care, they'll probably be Oklahoma.
All right, working our way. Remember, we are continuing to work our way back from a 15.5-point spread to a one even larger, as the way we picked it, at 17.5, the nightcap on New Year's Day, the Fiesta Bowl between Baylor and Central Florida. Both teams 11-1, both teams making their debut in a BCS bowl for the first time, but these two teams just appear, as the spread suggests, they are just playing very different levels of football right now. Blake Bortles really shot up the NFL draft boards, and that is an intriguing factor to see how he plays against this Baylor defense. I think Baylor's offense, especially when you get Tevin Reese back to sort of complete that offensive just juggernaut. Bryce Petty has already announced he's coming back. This seems like a good opportunity for the Baylor offense to sort of work on next year. What are you thinking about this game? And do you, Tom, do you feel like UCF is going to be able to at least make the spread interesting in this one?
Maybe. I mean, it's weird with UCF just because you can't tell if it's a team that's just not that good or if it's a team that's been playing to its competition, because they had such a strong start to the season, you know, knocking off the Louisville win earlier this year and also playing South Carolina very tough. But then you see them against bad teams playing in games that have no right being close, being extremely close in the last two games against South Florida and SMU to finish the season. Those were games that UCF, a team that's going to a BCS bowl game, should be blowing those opponents out. So I see now facing Baylor, who, like you mentioned, is getting Tevin Reese back, which is a big boost to that offense because he helps stretch the field vertically, not just horizontally. I have a hard time seeing, even with Poppin' Bortles back there, I have a hard time seeing UCF really keep up with Baylor on offense. They might slow them down a little bit, maybe not keep them from getting to the 50s, keep them in the upper 30s, low 40s, but I don't see the Knights putting up a ton of points in this game. So maybe they keep it close as regards to the spread, but I'm taking Baylor. I feel much more comfortable with Baylor minus 17.5 than I would UCF plus 17.5.
Jerry, if UCF's going to do it, it's, I guess like a Storm Johnson or William Stanbeck, the freshman running back who backs Johnson up, is it really just you try and keep the ball out of Petty's hands? I mean, what is the approach here if you're the Knights?
Yeah, I think the approach is to put as many points as you possibly can up on the board because you know that Baylor is going to put up a tremendous number of points themselves. Tevin Reese is back, as you know, we said Lake Seastrunk should be healthier than he's been in a long time. This is going to be the Baylor offense as it was constructed to start the season, basically. And as we remember, that offense was setting records left and right and appeared to be on its way towards breaking 2008 Oklahoma's like all-time scoring records before the injuries kind of derailed it a bit. I'm with Tom. I think this is a large spread, like larger enough that I'm not necessarily seeing this as a Baylor slam dunk because we know that defense can give up some points, and we know that UCF with Bortles and the running backs you mentioned can control the clock a bit, you know, definitely. You know, it won't be a surprise if they hang up like a 30 to 35 spot, and then you're talking about Baylor, you know, possibly getting all the way up to, you know, into the upper 50s to cover the spread. But, you know, Baylor's capable of going into the upper 50s to cover a spread, even when the opponent scores, you know, between 30 and 35. So I definitely think Baylor is the safer pick here. And again, Art Briles has been very good as a bowl coach. Blew out UCLA last year, down Washington in that memorable Alamo Bowl a couple of seasons ago. So I'm definitely leaning towards the Bears here.
We will move back in our New Year's Day to the Rose Bowl. In my opinion, probably one of the games that I have been anticipating the most since the bowls were announced. Michigan State, the way we picked them as a 4.5-point underdog, a little bit of a development in this recent week. Max Bullock ruled out late Christmas night for a violation of team rules. The team will not comment or address the nature of those violations, but certainly a setback for that Spartans defense that was the best in the nation. I am very interested, and I'll toss this one to you, Tom, Michigan State defense aficionado. Tyler Gaffney against Michigan State's defense, it seems to be the one matchup here where I feel like this game could be made or broken. What are you looking at? We're split again on this one, 3-3 as far as against the spread. You're taking the Spartans. What are you liking about their matchup, either against Gaffney, but also in the game as a whole?
You know, it's strange. The Bullock suspension, I think, is a big deal. But honestly, as far as the game is concerned, I'm not sure what impact it's truly going to have on the Michigan State defense. Because if you look at the players on that Spartans defense, there's a ton of guys that are, you know, you'd consider the playmakers, the guys that really make things happen, the Shalik Calhouns, Nico Salins, the Dark Quest and Arts. And Bullock to me is a guy who's very good, but I feel like the defense, the play gets funneled to him. That's his job with what the defensive line is doing. They're funneling it to him, and it helps Bullock rack up tackles. So obviously against Ty Gaffney, they're going to need somebody to come in and make those tackles who could play well, and it'd be nice if it's Bullock simply because of the experience. But I don't think it's going to be a huge blow for the Spartans defense overall. I think they'll be able to overcome it rather easily. I don't know if that's the right word. That's just the feeling I get. And I think Michigan State is a better defense than Stanford's. I think it's, you know, obviously it's one of the best defenses in the country. Statistically, total defense, it's the number one defense in the country. I'm leaning Michigan State simply because that also because Stanford's offense, as we've talked about on this podcast many times, it's so hard to know which Stanford team is going to show up on a weekly basis. It's always a good team, but will it be the great Stanford team or will it be the team that's just, you know, getting by? So I'm going with Michigan State simply because of the way they finished the season so strong, how they looked in that Ohio State game and how They actually seem to be, you know, adding more of a passing element to the offense in recent weeks. That's where they're being able to move the ball down the field. I like what Michigan State's doing right now, so that's why I'm going with the Spartans.
Yeah, I like what Connor Cook has been able to do. And Connor Cook wasn't even the starting quarterback at the beginning of the season. Kevin Hogan was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the season, and I think based on what we saw from him at the end of last year, I won't say that the year has been a disappointment. I mean, this he led an 11-2 team, but I don't think that we've necessarily seen the best Kevin Hogan on a week-in, week-out basis. Is that something that, as a Stanford fan, you think that you're going to need more than Tyler Gaffney just because Michigan State's defense is so strong?
Yeah, that's the thing, too. If Stanford's offense is one-dimensional, it's not going to score. Period. You have to be two-dimensional to beat this Michigan State defense, at least to beat them consistently.
Jerry, what are you liking about the Spartans?
Well, basically the things Tom said, just that their defense has been so outstanding. I think Darquez Dennard can basically lock up Ty Montgomery, and we all know how important Montgomery is to that Stanford offense. If you don't have Montgomery, then you're talking about Tyler Gaffney basically running himself into the Spartans, not just a normal eight-man front, but Michigan State's eight-man front. And, you know, even without Bullock, that's still, you know, arguably one of the best front sevens, front eights, if you will, in the entire country. It's hard for me to see Stanford mounting much in the way of drives that way. You know, it's really hard to see Michigan State mounting much in the way of drives on the Stanford defense. But as particularly with the quarterback matchup, you know, again, that Tom mentioned, I think at this stage you have to like Connor Cook a little bit more than you like Kevin Hogan. You know, he just strikes me as being a little bit more likely to make the big play in the passing game. And this is the sort of game that's going to come down to probably one big play in the passing game, like after, you know, beating each other over the head with rocks for 55 minutes. One quarterback or the other is going to make the one big play down the field, I think, that's going to decide this game. And I think Cook's a little bit more likely to do it.
All right, we are moving right along through New Year's Day onto the Outback Bowl. We got Iowa and LSU, no Zach Mettenberger, of course, suffering that torn ACL, and Anthony Jennings, who was able to lead LSU to a victory against Arkansas, will be stepping in. Going to need a lot from the skill position players, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Jeremy Hill, and others. And Iowa, Jerry, we got a really, really good defense. Offense, very hard to figure out. What are you expecting from this game in particular? You know, you're taking LSU. Are you thinking that this is a big LSU? We picked it at 7.5.
Yeah, I think LSU covers that. I think even without Zach Mettenberger, Anthony Jennings looked very good, actually, in his limited time against Arkansas. And, you know, LSU, to me, this is another matchup where the talent advantage in LSU's favor is just so overwhelming. Iowa is a very well-coached team, certainly defensively. With Kirk Ferentz, they really kind of came on at the end of the season, but they came on against Purdue, Michigan, and Nebraska. Those were the teams that made up their sort of three-game winning streak at the end, and that Nebraska team was just kind of openly mailing it in that game to some extent. You know, Iowa lost to Michigan State by 12, lost to Northern Illinois to start the season, lost to Ohio State by 10. You know, so they've got some respectable sort of losses, but also nothing that really makes you think necessarily they're ready to give LSU a game. If LSU shows up, plays their potential, Jennings looks like the same quarterback he appeared to be against Arkansas, I don't think this is a close game.
Tom, I think this is a close game. We're talking about a top 10 defense here and an Iowa team that plays to its competition. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it'll be closer. I agree with Jerry that LSU is thoroughly out-talents Iowa by a bit, but I do because Iowa has that. They have been a team, like you mentioned, that plays to their competition most of the year. And when they face a tough team, they play, you know, they'll stay in the game. And with, like, the injuries, Zach Mettenberger, I understand that came in and played well against Arkansas, but Arkansas is a bad football team and has been a bad football team all season. Iowa is a much better team, particularly on defense, than Arkansas has been. So I think he'll be better, more prepared with the extra weeks of practice. And since he has Beckham and Landry, he's got excellent weapons on the outside, but Iowa's defense overall, I think, will be good enough to keep them in a game. Now, whether Iowa's able to score enough points to win this game, I'm not going that far. I still have LSU winning straight up. But there's also, just looking at trends, outside of Kinnick this season, Iowa is 5-0 against the spread, and this game is not in Kinnick, as far as I know.
Oh, all right. Moving along to the Capital One Bowl, Wisconsin and South Carolina. I think, Tom, Melvin Gordon coming back is probably one of the biggest sort of stories surrounding this game. You got Jadeveon Clowney, likely his last game. But, man, this I'm looking at Gordon against, like, Kelce Quarles, Chaz Sutton, the rest of the run stoppers, not so much as the pass rushers from South Carolina's defense. On the other side of the ball, you got Chris Borland and a rock-solid Badgers defense as well. Joel Stavi, a little bit questionable. I think Connor Shaw probably has the edge. This one is a game we picked it at 1.5 in favor of the Badgers, and all of us here on the podcast are taking the Badgers. What do you like the most about Wisconsin?
You know, I have absolutely no idea what the hell happened in that last game against Penn State. But as far as this game, you know, that's in the past. Now, as far as this game concerned, and it worries me to say this because it's a New Year's Day bowl game between an SEC and a Big Ten team, but I just think Wisconsin is the better team in this game. I think on both sides of the ball, and talent-wise, I think Wisconsin matches up very well with South Carolina and has the edge in enough places to where it would be the better team, and that's simply the reason I'm picking it to win.
Yeah, South Carolina has they're very balanced in a lot of ways. It seems like, you know, you've got guys like Victor Hampton in the secondary that can, you know, also hold things down, as well as those stars along the defensive line we just mentioned. If there was an advantage, I guess you would say, Jerry, maybe the fact that Connor Shaw does have a leg up on Joel Stavi. Jared Aberderis versus Victor Hampton will be something fun to watch. Are you feeling any more confident? I'm not feeling very confident. Are you feeling more confident than Tom or myself?
No. This is another total coin flip game for me. This is one I just want to be able to sit back and watch because I think the matchup here is fascinating with this Wisconsin ground game. You know, we've seen it just pulverize so many Big Ten teams. And so here comes Kelce Quarles and Jadeveon Clowney. You know, are those guys going to be able to make a dent in the Wisconsin rushing game that we haven't seen so many of these Big Ten teams be able to do? Melvin Gordon, you know, is electric. We all know that. So it should be fascinating in that sense. Again, you know, even on the other side of the ball, we get Connor Shaw going in. It's Chris Borland and the rest of that Badger defense. I don't know how it's going to play out. You know, just my sense all season was that Wisconsin was one of the most underrated teams in the country. Again, their first two losses, the officiating debacle in the air out in Tempe against Arizona State, and then a competitive 7-point loss to Ohio State in Columbus. You know, I'm with Tom. I think you look at the way they performed over the course of the entire season, and I think they're just maybe a hair better than South Carolina up and down, offense and defense. And, you know, again, coaching, you know, pretty much cancels itself out. But Gary Anderson, you know, is just an outstanding coach, did very well in his time at Utah State, when he took them to bowl games. So I like you know, that matchup as well. Steve Spurrier obviously knows what he's doing too, but I don't think Wisconsin is going to be at a disadvantage in that department is what I'm trying to say.
Spurrier is going to be on the sideline shirtless drinking a beer. He's not paying any attention to this game.
Man, for the sake of our New Year's Day traffic, I would love if Spurrier's on the sideline shirtless drinking
just
a beer.
Just cracking jokes about Clowney speeding tickets the entire game every time Clowney walks by. Well, slow down there, champ.
What we'll do if that happens is we get to take the second half of the Fiesta Bowl off. We're like, all right, we're done for the day. We don't even need to watch the rest. All right, all the way back. Now we're into these noon kickoffs on New Year's Day, the first of which being – not the first of which at the same time, but the Heart of Dallas Bowl, UNLV in North Texas. The funniest thing –
New Year's game of all time.
The funniest thing about this Heart of Dallas Bowl from an expert picks CBSSports.com perspective is just, I mean, I need some clippers for the amount of hedging that is being done among the experts that looked at UNLV in North Texas and said, sure? As all of us took the favorite to win straight up and the underdog to cover the spread. Oh, Bruce Feldman took North Texas to cover the spread. But we all took North Texas to win straight up, and we all took UNLV to cover 6.5. It's not even a touchdown, but I will fully admit that it's because I just wasn't sure. Jerry, can you admit the same?
yes. I do think, again, talking in terms of schedule and talent and this sort of thing, UNLV has been a successful Mountain West team, whereas North Texas was a successful Sun Belt team last year and successful Conference USA team this year. And I tend to lean towards the Mountain West in those kinds of matchups. And we've seen that sort of play out early here in the bowl season. Utah State, even without Chucky Keaton, kind of handled Northern Illinois. And obviously San Diego State blew poor Buffalo clear out of the water, and something that, frankly, was a bit of a surprise to me. There's that. I think North Texas is at home. Basically, you know, this game is much, much closer to Denton, Texas than it is to Las Vegas, which I think, you know, should be enough for the Mean Green to pull out the win straight up. But I don't see them being good enough to cover the 6.5. Sorry, North Texas.
Oh, man. Even and
I like Tim Cornette.
I was just about to say, Jerry's boy, Tim Cornette.
Yeah, I am. I think he can be the difference in covering the spread.
That's all my notes said for this game was bet hedging, and it said bet hedging and Jerry's boy Tim Cornette. That's all I had written down. What do you have for this one, Tom?
I don't really have too much to add, except like you said, I was sure what to do against the spread, so I just took the points. But I will say that even though the odds of any of us really watching this game are very, very low, I will say that UNLV versus Texas in the heart of Dallas Bowl is a lot more interesting to me than that Oklahoma State Purdue matchup in the same game was.
Oh, yes. God, that was awful. That shouldn't have been shown on television.
No, because that was a good team against a terrible Big Ten team. And these are at least, you know, two smaller conference teams that are good smaller conference teams. So it presents a more interesting matchup.
And Tim Cornette's playing.
And Jerry's boy, playing. Tim Cornette, is playing.
Jerry's wearing his Tim Cornette jersey.
The Gator Bowl will be kicking off at the same time. Nebraska and Georgia, a rematch of last year's Capital One Bowl. No Taylor Martinez, no Aaron Murray. But who will be there? Todd Gurley and Amir Abdullah. What are you thinking? Tom, do we know whether Kellogg or Armstrong is going to be starting yet?
We probably do, but I don't know.
Because Hudson Mason Kellogg Armstrong sounds like a law firm that could help out Jadeveon Clowney with those speeding tickets. But what are you thinking about this one? The way that we picked the game is at a 9.5 Georgia favorite, and all three of us are taking Georgia to roll in this one. If you're picking Georgia to take 9.5, are you worried at all? I mean, this is like this could be a Bo Pelini meltdown game.
Neither of these teams wants to be there. Their fans don't want to be there to watch it. I didn't want to pick it. I'll only be watching with passing interest, and I picked Georgia. And if you really want like a deep reason for it, SEC. There's my reason for picking Georgia in this matchup.
What you got, Jerry?
I've got that Nebraska lost their final game of the season 38-17 to Iowa. I think the Huskers are just ready for this season to be over. You know, Pelini, he knows he's going to be back next year. The players know he's going to be back next year, or at least we think we know that. I just think they're ready to put this season behind them. And Georgia, you know, I think they're also probably ready to put 2013 to bed. But they're going to be playing in extremely familiar surroundings, you know, there in Jacksonville. You know, they're going to have a lot of guys who want to show out for their families that are going to be in town for the game. You know, Hudson Mason wants to show that he can get it done as a quarterback, you know, after Murray, you know, moves on to the NFL. So I think there's just a little bit more on the line for Georgia than there is Nebraska. And, you know, we saw last season, you know, Georgia won, you know, by, I think, 13 points in this same matchup. You know, that doesn't have a lot of bearing, I think, on this year's game, considering that motivation would be such a factor, and it's different, you know, this time around. But I think the motivation is kind of equal here, or maybe a slight favor to Georgia. So I'm rolling with the dogs on this one.
All right, let's go into a pseudo lightning round. Just a little bit of if you can think of the one fact or the one matchup that matters as we are coming down the stretch here with the games on the 31st and the 30th, and Maryland and Marshall have already exchanged punts. Duke and Texas A&M playing in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. We got Cutcliffe going up against Manziel. This is a game that will be very, very tough on the Duke defense, but Texas A&M's defense has shown that they can give up a lot, particularly on the ground. Duke missing its leading rusher from their running back by committee. Jerry, what stands out to you about this game?
What stands out to me is that if you're going to be Texas A&M, you need to be a good rushing team and take advantage of that terrible, terrible Texas A&M front seven. Duke does not meet that criteria, in my opinion. I also think Texas A&M really has a bad taste in their mouths from the way they played at the end of the season against Missouri, and against LSU. And I think they're going to really want to come out and kind of show out in Atlanta. I think they absolutely roll Duke.
And you are taking the Aggies -12.5, as is Tom. Yeah. Tom, what do you like about this one?
Dude, it's Manziel's last game.
He's going ball.
He's not going out like that. He's not going out losing to Duke.
I don't think that they're losing, but I could see this being like a 45-38.
No. You can convince yourself, Mr. 2-6, but no.
The Liberty Bowl features Rice and Mississippi State. Rice already has two bowl wins under David Bailiff, including last year against Air Force in the Armed Forces Bowl. Mississippi State looking to avoid its first losing season under Dan Mullen. Dak Prescott obviously stepping in the Egg Bowl for that Big Six win. Rice is powered by Charlie Ross, a 1,200-yard rusher in that option attack. Rice has already faced one SEC defense and put a scare into Texas A&M. But, Tom, does Texas A&M's defense count as an SEC defense?
Yeah, Yes. Plays the SEC.
I got you.
SEC doesn't play defense anymore.
But Chris Jones and Mississippi State, I would argue that the Bulldogs' defense as a total unit is much stronger than Texas A&M.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think this Rice team's pretty good for, a Conference USA team. And Mississippi State really hasn't been all that impressive to me this year, even when they've won. So I feel like this game is going to either be a Mississippi State blowout just because it's going to out-muscle Rice, or it's going to be a close game, and I don't know who wins, but I'm leaning to close game, so I'm going to take that 7.5.
Taking 7.5. Jerry, taking 7.5 as well. What you thinking about it?
I'm thinking, like Tom said, I think Mississippi State's, a decent team this year. They've had a couple of tough losses. Remember, they played Auburn, down to the final minute, only lost that game by 4. So I think they're a quality team, but I think Rice is a quality team, too. They won Conference USA, and they're going to be the more motivated team. They played exceptionally well in last year's bowl game against Air Force. And Mississippi State, I think their season was a success when they won the Egg Bowl. I don't think they probably feel like this game's going to matter a lot to them either way. I expect, because of the talent gap, it to be a close game down the stretch. Mississippi State may win it, but I do like Rice to be able to cover the 7.5.
The Sun Bowl has Virginia Tech and UCLA. I would not say that it is the most appealing matchup, but there are a lot of names that will be playing on Sundays. Guys like Brett Hundley, Miles Jack, James Gale, Derek Hopkins, Jack Tyler, Luther Maddy, Kendall Fuller, Kyle Fuller on the sideline, but at least Little Bro will be out there. A lot of talent. Hard to get a read on what this game is going to be. It's in El Paso. Doesn't always have the best attendance from the fans. And considering UCLA and Los Angeles and Blacksburg, Virginia, I don't know if you're going to get it in this one. Tom, what are you thinking in here? Actually, I'm going to let Jerry take it first because Jerry is the only one of the experts taking the Hokies to cover 7.5.
Yeah, well, UCLA didn't show up for the bowl game last year under Jim Mora. That was Baylor, and they were not close. And I don't see that they're going to be super motivated for this game either. The win over USC, much like Mississippi State, the win over USC, I think, was kind of the validation on their season. Going to El Paso for a game against Virginia Tech, I don't think this is one that they're really going to be super duper excited about. The Hokies, on the other hand, come in as the big underdog, 7.5 points. Frank Beamer has always been able to get his guys ready for big games. I don't necessarily expect a Hokie win, but if you're giving me the Hokies with 7.5, considering how well Virginia Tech's defense has played for most of the season, I want the 7.5.
times when UCLA has struggled offensively have been in direct correlation to getting pressure on Brett Hundley, either because of the offensive line that's sort of held together by duct tape for the Bruins. And that is an area that the Hokies might be able to exploit. Still, I think their struggles on offense might hold them back. Tom, what's your feeling when you're looking at this UCLA? You've got UCLA covering 7.5, but would you take them covering 9.5 in this game?
Probably not. I mean, it's another one of those games where I'm not exactly confident in it. But my biggest concern is Oklahoma's offense or UCLA's offensive line against the Virginia Tech front seven. I think that could be very problematic for the Bruins with the amount of injuries that UCLA's had up there and the youth that they have up there. But I also just don't have a ton of faith, as I've never had a ton of faith in Virginia Tech's ability to score points. So I just went with UCLA. It was more of a, you know, got to go somewhere.
Yeah, it feels like a 7-10 point game, but I don't feel super confident either way with that one. Great game in the Advocare V100 T2000 Bowl, as Boston College will have Andre Williams going up against Kadeem Carey in Arizona, both teams 7-5. First time in the modern college football history that two AP first team running backs, again, ever since they added the second running back, will be facing each other in a bowl game. What you got on this one, Tom? I think the only thing that I feel positive of is that this game might be over in 2.5 hours.
First of all, it's still the Independence Bowl to me.
I know. You continue to label it the Independence Bowl on every on everything.
Free this game from the shackles of Drew Brees and the Witten family and their endorsements. The Independence Bowl. I'm really looking forward to this game, like you said, because of the matchup between Williams and Kadeem Carey. But I think overall Arizona's the better team. So that's why I'm taking the Wildcats -7.5.
Jerry?
Yeah, I think Arizona, I think they've got a bad taste in their mouth from last year's bowl experience. If you remember, they almost blew the big, or they needed the huge comeback against Nevada. I guess they won the game, so maybe the taste isn't that bad. But, you know, that was not a sterling performance necessarily. I think, you know, Rich Rodriguez has probably learned from that. I just don't think, you know, Boston College's defense wasn't really that great this season. You know, neither was Arizona's, I guess. But Pac-12 versus ACC, you know, probably about the same level of motivation, I'm guessing. BC may be a little bit more motivated since they didn't go to a bowl last year at all. You know, if it sounds like I'm rambling, it's because I don't have a really firm read on this game, other than that I just think, as Tom said, Arizona's a little bit of a better team top to bottom. That Oregon victory was really kind of eye-opening. I think in the end, yeah, sure, Arizona. -7.5. Why not?
Yeah.
There's your expert pick.
Both teams are in the middle of their respective conferences in rushing defense, and they're each giving up at least 150 yards per game on the ground. So
I'm sorry, Chip. I feel like I failed you here, just not being able to find a solid angle. I apologize to you and to our listeners.
Well, why don't you take the lead on Texas Tech, Arizona State?
Okay, well, I'll do that. That's that Arizona State has one of the best offenses in the country. Hopefully they're going to get Marion Grice back, Taylor Kelly. You know, no, they didn't show up against Stanford necessarily, but that's Stanford. Texas Tech's defense is the polar opposite of Stanford. You know, this game is definitely going to be in Pac-12 country there in San Diego. Texas Tech, you know, I just think was kind of exposed after that big start. Really, really struggled down the stretch. I don't see them stopping Todd Graham and Arizona State's offense at all, which, if you'll remember, really showed out in last year's bowl game, completely crushed Navy. I like Todd Graham, actually, in his bowl prep. I think they roll the Red Raiders.
What you got, Tom?
Yeah, if Arizona State shows up, I don't see this one being much of a contest.
Alamo Bowl, a lot of farewells going on. It will be Mack Brown's last game. It will also be the last game for longtime Oregon defensive coordinator Nick Alioti. As Bruce Feldman reports, and the school confirms on Friday afternoon that he will be stepping down at the end of the season. So a lot of interesting storylines. It is also one of the games with the best bowl swag. They get like iPad minis and all kinds of good gear. And Texas and Oregon already get great gear. I don't get it.
That's what the kids at Texas and Oregon need, those poor athletic departments that can't afford to give them anything.
Yeah, what's up with that? All right, Tom, let's talk about the game. 13.5 was the where we picked at with obviously the Ducks favored. You were taking the Longhorns to cover that. Is this the Mac effect, or is there a particular angle that you like?
There's two things. One, you know, rise for Mac. It's his last game. They're going to be, you know, they're not going to not show up for Mac Brown's right. last game. Texas is coming to play. And the other side, I don't think Oregon really even wants to be there. You know, this is, as we've mentioned, once Oregon lost out on the national championship hopes, you know, they were saying out of context, but they're saying, you know, they don't even want to play in the Rose Bowl. They've been to the Rose Bowl before. So now they're playing in the Alamo Bowl. So whatever the context was for when they're saying, for when they were saying that, the fact that they're playing in this bowl game and they weren't pumped up about an idea of going to the Rose Bowl, I hardly see them getting fired up to play in the Alamo Bowl.
What you got, Jerry?
I think that's actually fairly persuasive. I've got Oregon minus the 13.5 just because Texas has been so bad against ranked teams. We saw it again in the season finale against Baylor. You know, just teams that are actually good beat this Texas team. They have beaten this Texas team under Mac Brown for the last several years. You know, I think if you're a Longhorns fan, you know, you definitely credit Mac Brown for everything he's accomplished, but you're probably also looking forward to this being his farewell game. And I absolutely think Texas is going to play with a lot of motion. They're going to be playing a virtual home game there in San Antonio. There's a lot of reasons to think the Longhorns cover the spread, maybe even win this game, but that reason is not like on paper or in terms of the matchups of these two teams, because, you know, if Mariota is playing on his game, if DeAnthony Thomas is dialed in, that whole Oregon, you know, offense actually shows up. You know, they really ought to be able to run Texas out of the stadium if they're even a tenth as motivated as the Longhorns are. It's a tough, tough call, but I think having some of the time off and knowing if you're Oregon that you've played so poorly down the stretch, I think they'll actually be a little bit more focused than people maybe are giving them credit for. I think we'll see.
We will see. Moving on to the Music City Bowl, Georgia Tech and Ole Miss. This is a game, Jerry, we talked, I think, either on and maybe just casually, this matchup of middle of the conference, middle of the road, ACC and SEC teams leads to some fun. It's not always the best game, but it's at least fun. And when you've got like Paul Johnson and Georgia Tech, Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss, I'm getting the feeling we'll have that again. What do you like in this game from a matchup perspective? The way that we picked the game, we have Ole Miss as a 2.5-point favorite.
I like Georgia Tech's ability to sort of sharpen up the option during the time off. Everybody talks about, you know, the defense, you know, having extra time to prepare or whatever. Well, you know, it's still one thing to prepare for the option. It's another to actually face it. And, you know, Paul Johnson's run into some bowl trouble on occasion against LSU a few years ago in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. After a big upset of Georgia, his team got crushed, and they didn't perform well against Iowa in the Orange Bowl. But they looked very good in the Sun Bowl last season against USC, so call that a wash. I just think Georgia Tech's the more kind of motivated team. You know, they're the ACC team, have a little bit, you know, with a chip on the shoulder facing the SEC team. And Hugh Freeze's team just didn't look all there down the stretch of the season. Really had kind of a limp performance against Missouri, lost to Mississippi State, which is a team I think they really were better than. I don't know. You know, Georgia Tech had the big collapse against Georgia, which probably, you know, they're going to have to shake that off. I think, you know, all things considered, Georgia Tech isn't as good a team as Ole Miss, but I just like their sort of psychological status a little bit better, knowing that they let one get away against Georgia and now kind of have one last chance to prove themselves against the SEC. I like their attitude coming in here. You know, Ole Miss, again, just haven't looked like a team that's really been energized over the last half of the season. I like the Yellow Jackets.
And that is from the one expert that is picking Georgia Tech in this matchup. Now on
bad sign.
On to Tom. You got Ole Miss. I've got Ole Miss. Bruce has got Ole Miss. Bruce's family has Ole Miss. Jeremy, Dennis, we all got Ole Miss. What do you like about them in the matchup?
About Jerry Iscariot over there just betraying his Ole Miss team from preseason like that.
Yep.
Number two in the SEC West in the
now
preseason
prediction.
He doesn't
even think they're going to beat Georgia Tech in a bowl game.
Slap in the face.
Well, no. How many times do we have to say it? There is no – hell hath no fury like an expert picker score.
That's true. All right, Tom, what you got in this one?
I took Ole Miss because I just don't pick option teams in bowl games. It usually works out for me that way.
Nice. That works very well. Okay.
Worked out free in the Sun Bowl last year?
Yeah, but that was different. USC didn't, you know, not exactly came to play that game. They were miserable, freezing in El Paso.
Oh, by the way,
they wanted Kiffin to get fired. I think we picked that up this year, considering the way they played after Kiffin got fired. I think that's something the players were angling for.
I have an excellent point about the UCLA Virginia Tech game. By the way, it's going to be a barn burner, and you should tune in on CBS at 2 p.m. New Year's Eve.
Thank you. Thanks for paying our bills. Middle Tennessee and Navy. Middle Tennessee didn't impress me all that much. Navy has Keenan Reynolds, and what do you guys see in Middle Tennessee that you like? Jerry, you first.
I like that Navy doesn't always show up against low-level, FBS competition. Low-level meaning like mid-majors. They lost to Western Kentucky earlier this season. They've struggled with other Sun Belt teams over the last couple of years. And Middle Tennessee, is not a bad team at all. You know, their Conference USA picked up some good wins here and there. I like Coach Rick Stockstill, has done an excellent job there. I don't necessarily disagree or don't necessarily agree that you should just automatically go against the option team in bowl games. But I don't think, Navy has struggled at times. They did struggle against Arizona State mightily last year. The year before that got blown out by San Diego State out in the Poinsettia Bowl. So they haven't really shown up their last two bowl games at all. And I expect that trend to continue.
All right, and Tom, you just went against them because you don't pick option teams?
I don't pick option teams in bowl games.
Tom doesn't pick option teams in bowl games, and we are fighting to chase down Dennis Dodd, who is still very much in the lead, but only 4-4. Jeremy Fowler, 6-2, has bumped me back to the cellar. He emerged from the cellar. He's thrown me down there. We've all got our fights, and you can check them out at CBSSports.com on the expert picks. For Tom Fornelli and Jerry Hinnan, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.